Hey there, welcome to Borifuli. My name is Chisani. If this is your first time here, I welcome you with two wide open arms. If I had more arms, I would open all of them up. But I'm so glad you're here. Our intention in creating this space is to be able to take the time to step back so that we can be radically honest with ourselves about what we're doing in our lives, where we're headed, and how we want to consciously co-create with the universe a life that feels authentic and fulfilling. If this is not your first time and this is your second or umpteenth time, I welcome you back. I'm so excited that you're here again. Our last podcast episode dove into my personal experience with Mother Aya. And it's come to my attention that perhaps the way that I shared my story has created a lot of fear for people, a lot of ajda, if you will, for people who might have once considered ayahuasca. The thing about any type of plant medicine, not just ayahuasca, so ayahuasca, huachuma, psilocybin, you know, the mushrooms, and I know there are others that I am not personally aware of, but the thing about plant medicines that the Western society, where I am, have become to slowly grow more accustomed to being open to, is that they hold a sacred space of sacredness that we don't know how in the West to revere. And so some of us, including myself, go into this experience with this blasé attitude where there maybe perhaps isn't enough fear instilled in our hearts for us to be able to show up in a way where we are showing up with appreciation and gratitude, but with also a sense of awe and fear. My intention is not to scare anyone from having that experience. My intention is to share what my experience was like, so that for those of us who are questioning, who is curious whether or not you decide in the future to experience Mother Aya for yourself, you can hear from my experience, my story, the things that have happened to me. And in doing so, I'm hoping to share a different perspective, to open up perspectives, to provide different lenses so that we can see this world with a multitude of different resources. And today's episode, I really want to dive into this idea of reverence, and I will in a little bit, but I think it requires me to set the context. So having come back from Peru, a lot of the conversations that I have with the people, the friends, the family that I met in Peru revolve around this notion of integrating the things that we learned back in Peru in the Amazon jungle back into our quote-unquote real lives. But the thing about our quote-unquote real lives and integrating the things that we've brought back into the jungle is that we're going to hit roadblocks, not just speed bumps, if we're not careful to be intentional about holding the space from being aware of why you went to experience ayahuasca in the first place. So what was the intention for the experience? What did Mother Aya ask you to bring back from that experience? And how do you, with integrity, bring that experience back in a way that allows you to show up from the presence of an individual who experienced something groundbreaking, who experienced God? When I went to ayahuasca, my only intention was to be able to connect to the purest frequency of love. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to connect to real, unconditional, pure love. And what Mother Aya taught me, if you haven't listened to the episode, but prior to this one, I do highly recommend that you listen to it before you listen to today's. But what Mother Aya taught me is that in order for us to experience something like the purest frequency of love, we need to be able to understand its contrast, because the human experience is a dual one in such that we don't understand things without polarity. And so in order for me to bring back the experience of a pure frequency of love, I needed to be able to understand and hold the container of what its contrast, what its opposite or its absence is like. And to bring that back has been something of a, I want to say for lack of a better word, a tumultuous experience. One, because I haven't been very clear about the intention that I brought into ayahuasca. And two, I haven't been very clear with myself of really understanding and hearing what Mother Aya has asked me to bring back. And then three, how do I integrate all of those things together to my life the way that it was before, but in such a way that my presence and the way that I live my life is an act of devotion, an act of a witness of what being able to experience God outside of these prison bars that I call myself, that I call the ego, what that's like. In order for me to be able to do my life any justice, I need to be really clear on what my intentions are. Otherwise, my severe ADHD mind will take me from point A to point Z in half a second. And I need to be able to be clear with myself about why I want to bring the experience of Mother Ayahuasca back. Why it's important to me to be able to live my life from a place where I've come back as a changed person, not as someone who experienced something radical and then has forgotten about it. In fact, to that end, I wanted to share a story that I read online, which answered some questions for me. So something that I've noticed, not just from people that I know personally, but from other accounts of stories of having ayahuasca experiences, is that people jump from ayahuasca to ayahuasca experience within a few months, within a year. So a lot of people that I know are already planning to go back to experience ayahuasca again when we have just come back, for example. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to experience that again, as long as I'm clear about why I want to experience that again and coming from a place of integrity. A lot of people jump from ship to ship. Just like in the Western society, we are very much accustomed to looking for the silver bullet, to looking for shortcuts. If you start hearing sounds in the back, it's my dog snoring. So I've been grappling with this thought and this judgment of why we keep wanting these shortcuts. And now she's not just snoring. She is having dreams, hopefully good dreams. She's crying, but and barking. anyway, again, ADHD. But I'm going to take us to the story that I read that really helped me to understand something very, very clearly. So the plant medicine is still relatively new to the Western civilization, and we need to be able to do it justice. And this is a story that speaks to that. 30 years ago, I was traveling in Thailand, and at a meditation retreat, I spoke with the head monk about this. I asked, "Is it possible to reach enlightened state with psychedelics?" He answered, "Of course. But you cannot hold it. You are too weak. To hold it, you need to grow the mental muscles. Meditation will build those muscles." He smiled and chuckled while he answered, every bit the perfect monk presence. We have this tendency, and I don't think it's just a Western civilization thing, but we have this tendency to want to have shortcuts, to find the silver bullet or the fountain of youth, to have that one answer and that one answer be the end all be all. And this is probably the reason why we give our power away, our power to make decisions for ourselves away. In fact, this is going slightly off tangent, so hopefully I'll remember to come back. I was out at a dinner at a function recently, and I'm not going to name any names, but at this dinner, we're at this nice restaurant, and on the menu is Iberico ham. For those of you that are not familiar, Iberico ham is a type of ham that is imported from Spain, for example. And so I distinctly remembered seeing a big old chunk of a pig just set on stage for people to see as we walk in. But a lot of the people in my party didn't see it. It didn't cross their awareness. And some of these people like have actually never heard of Iberico ham. And so they're asking questions about Iberico ham, what it tastes like, what it's like. I can't answer personally because when I went to Spain last, I didn't have any ham. I was a vegetarian. And I remember having said something along the lines of, well, if you want to see where Iberico ham comes from, you should walk yourself to the front of the restaurant because there you'll see a big chunk of a poor cow, not cow, poor pig, just hanging out there for us to entertain ourselves with. I don't know, to see, to witness. And I say that with like a puzzled look on my face. There's definitely a different word that I want to search for, but for the interest, for the sake of this story, I'm going to keep going. And probably about two or three people that heard that comment, that response, looked at me with absolute puzzlement on their face, going, I could never look or see what I was eating. There's no way I could possibly allow myself to see half a pig hanging off the wall or hanging on a table. There's just no way I would be able to eat what I eat then. I didn't say anything in that moment, but I sat there and I had to like do this, I guess, kind of like a double take where I literally felt my head tilt to the right. And I was thinking about how in the West, I only say that because I'm from the West and I'm sure it's this way in a lot of different places in the world today. But we have this thing where we are making choices from a very ignorant place where we say, you know what, I don't want to be responsible for that pig that gave up his life. And yet, even though I don't want to look at it, I'm going to deny that it's there. I'm going to sit here and order three plates of it. That just boggles my mind. And it probably triggered me because this probably says a lot more about me than I would like to admit. But we make these decisions from a place where we want to be in denial. I remember, so in a lot of traditions, like the Korean tradition, when we cook fish, we bring the whole thing out. So you see his eyes, his mouth, and everything. And I remember the first time my in-laws ever saw the head of a fish at the table, their mouth, jaws just dropped right open and said, oh my God, how can you look at that thing and eat at the same time? But if we can't be grateful for where our food comes from, if we can't acknowledge and appreciate and actually sit there for just 30 seconds and say thank you to the pig or to the fish, saying thank you for giving up your life for me to nourish my body, how could we possibly live in a world where we could possibly disillusion ourselves to pretend like we can raise our consciousness or raise our awareness or live more in integrity when we are in denial of something so foundational as food? It's something that boggles my mind. I'm going to bring us back before I get too lost in this train of thought. But we live in a society where we want shortcuts and we want silver bullets and we want these things done for us. And so we make decisions without actually being able to make decisions. We allow the rest of the world to make our decisions. So coming back from Peru, coming back from experiencing God's source the way that I did through the help of Mother Aya, it helped me to realize that in my life personally, there is something so big missing, something so pivotal missing. And that is my commitment, my willingness to show the universe that the universe can trust me as much as the universe asks me to trust it. That I can devote myself to creating a space where I can hold the things that are sacred in my life sacred again. And I believe in a society where we have been so ingrained with achievement after achievement, the go, 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 that distorted masculine energy. We've forgotten what it means to actually take the step back and to revere, to hold sacred, to quote unquote, that's what worship really is to hold sacred. That space to say, I invite the thing that is so great, so beyond my little itty tiny piece of knowledge or awareness or wisdom to be able to hold, even to conceptualize this God source, this universe, life and love, to hold that space in my life sacred is something that I realize Mother Aya asked of me coming back. Now, given who I am as a human being, being so imperfect, over the past few weeks, I don't know that if I can count on more than two hands actually having done that, whether I want to blame the flu that I had that put me out of commission for 4 days, or, you know, just having a personal life that gets in the way, the two puppies, whatever the reason or the million justifications that I can create, I realize that I am such a small being, falling so short on what I imagined I was capable of. But being okay with it, to be able to have the grace and compassion for myself to say, that's okay, learn from it and make it count. Scrape off your knees and get back up and keep going. It's something that has been so near and dear to me. And so when I have conversations with other people about the integration experience, what my life is like coming back from ayahuasca, did my life turn upside down? Is everything different? Is everything crumbling, falling apart? Do I have relationships that are falling away? My answer to that question surrounding those conversations, within those conversations, is sometimes. And at other times, it feels like nothing has changed at all. And that's because the ayahuasca experience, any plant medicine experience, any experience, not even a hoorah, Tony Robbins, Brendan Burchard type of experience, none of those things stick unless you put in the work, unless you consistently show up, unless I consistently show up every day to put in the work. It can be something as small as being mindful and intentional about my food, about how my relationship to food has completely changed since coming back. It can be as small and as something that might feel inconsequential as that, but is of so much consequence that I changed just one little thing, like my relationship to food. I would have never guessed before Peru that I had a serious food addiction. But coming back, I realized I really had a serious food addiction. And I don't know if I should sign myself for AA and continue to put myself in an identity where I will continue to have food addictions. I don't think that's true. But my relationship to food so far, and we all have this, it might not be food for you. For you, it might be video games or a personal loved one. It might be an idea of yourself. It might be your career. It might be something that can be tangible, that maybe is not. But each one of us has this thing that is a crutch. And we use that crutch as an addiction. It's something that we use to fill the void that wants to be filled instead with love and with self-insight and self-inquiry. But instead, because we want to give that power away, because we don't want to do the work, we say, no, just give me that bag of chips. I'd rather have the bag of M&Ms, whatever it is. Or for you, it might be, no, it's okay. I'm going to fill every free second I have with that person that I am absolutely head over heels in love with. Or maybe for you, it's going to the gym. When you fill your time, that antsiness, that angst with, I'm going to go to the gym and quote unquote, make myself a better person. That might be what it looks like for you. And I'm not sure. Maybe I haven't even begun to touch it. Maybe it's a porn addiction. Maybe it's addiction to gambling, whatever that is. If we don't decide to take the steps, to put in the work, to actually changing ourselves, nothing really changes. If I don't put in the work to meditate, if I don't put in the work to create a container in the evenings just as much as I create a container in the mornings, if I don't do that, nothing changes. If I don't change inside, nothing changes. If you're having struggles with this, the one thing that I might share, if you'd like to hear, that's made it a lot easier for me so far has been this. Up until this point in my life, my quote-unquote inner work, my shadow work, has always been for me. For me, my quote-unquote motivator has been, no, I want to be that better person. I want to become a greater person, a higher frequency. I used to have these thoughts about what it meant to do that work and how I might go about motivating myself to do that work. But now I'm in a place, because of the experience that I've had, thanks to the help and support of Mother Aya, of meeting God's source beyond the prison bars that I've set for myself called the ego. Now that I've met and experienced that sacredness, that holiness of God, of life and of love again, it's become a lot easier. So I'm realizing in the past couple of weeks that what really makes things much easier for me to carry through, to follow through on, is to remember to make it a devotion. It's an act of devotion. When I come down here at 9:30 at night, and I'd rather much be sleeping on the couch or in bed or reading or doing anything else, when I do that, when I sit here and I choose to meditate instead, even though every cell in my body says, get up, go do something else, I'm so tired, I'd rather be doing this. I could have a million different justifications. When I remember that it's an act of devotion, everything changes. This is how I've been able to create the changes in my life I have so far since ayahuasca. The changes in my diet, the changes in my relationship to food, the changes. There's so many different little things that I've been able to do consistently, one at a time. And that's been the key for me too, is to do these things one at a time. It's been so much easier to do when I remind myself that I do it, because it's an act of devotion from me to the thing that I hold sacred, that sense of magic and life. And there is just a sense of holiness, a sacredness that's been missing. And I think it's been missing from our civilization for a really long time. So I implore you, I welcome you to think about, to consider, what in your life might feel much easier for you to do, to change? What about yourself do you think would become a lot more expansive and open and loving and kind if you could just spend 2 minutes every day to hold something sacred, to, as an act of devotion, to hold that thing sacred, whether it's your love for nature or for, you know, your children or for God? Hopefully it's not for something like video games, but what for you is sacred? And start there. And then one thing at a time, make the changes that really stick. There's really no right or wrong way to go about this. As long as you remember to take things slow, as long as you remember that there is no wrong way to do it, but your way. And your way is the right way. Your way is the way that you're supposed to experience life right now. I would like to share a story here with you as we wrap up. And I'm not sure exactly where I came across this story, so I can't give credit to the owner, but I will give credit to whoever has created this story in spirit. Once upon a time, there once was a group of five wise men who, while conversing through the forest, lost their way. The first wise man said, "We should go left, as my intuition tells me that's the right way out." The second said, "No, we should go right, because the right implies that's the right way." And yet the third wise man said, "No, the easiest way would be to go back to where we started. That's a certainty." The fourth replied, "Not at all. The way out has to be forward. The forest must end at some point." The fifth interjected and said, "Wait here. I know exactly what to do." He proceeded to look for the tallest tree in the forest and climbed. Up he went, and from there, he could see that all four of them below had become quite impatient, disagreed with one another, and all went their respective ways. The fifth climbed even higher still and saw that there was clearly a way out that would be the shortest, and thought to himself, "Fools, I have the right way out." So what do you think? Who do you think was right and had the right way out? Before you stick to one decision and you have conviction, absolute conviction about which one it is, I want to tell you what happened to all of them. The first man that went left became lost in the thicket of the bushes and the woods and had to learn to fight other animals to survive. He learned to survive in the forest and therefore could teach others to do the same. The second man that went to the right ran into a group of thieves who stole everything from him. He traveled with them for a while and eventually taught them what it means to have compassion and humanity again. The third man that went back to the beginning inadvertently created a trail for others in the forest so that they could find a way out if they, too, were to get lost. The fourth man ventured out of the woods to new frontier and new opportunities. And as a pioneer, he found plants and lands that were healing and opened new opportunities for others. The fifth man eventually became sought out by many to teach them how to find the most efficient way through a problem and any solution. I hope that story was helpful. I hope all of this was helpful. As always, I am sending you many blessings of love and aloha. And until next time, everyone, I'll see you on the other side.